Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing the ramifications of change in our communities and beyond and how today's choices will impact tomorrow's community. This program is an extension and production of Action for Healthy Communities and provided in collaboration with KCBX. It's made possible through underwriting by Joan Geller Sargent. I'm Chris Kington Barker. Webster's defines resilience in a person or animal as able to withstand or recover quickly from difficult situations. A resilient object or substance is able to recoil or spring back into shape after bending, stretching, or being compressed. Resiliency is the topic of today's show, and given today's physical, emotional, and political environment, one that we may need all need in some capacity. My guests today are Dr. Matthew J. Moore, professor of political science at Cal Poly SLO, and Malena. I've got this written wrong here. Malena Triana and Chase Maurer, who are students at Cal Poly SLO. All three are here today to talk about the Resiliency Project and how it seeks to learn how people experience setbacks, opposition, and oppression while retaining or ultimately regaining mental and physical well-being. You're also invited to be a part of today's show by calling us at 805-781-3875. We welcome your perspective and participation in our discussion, and welcome to all three of you.
Thank you so much for having us.
And Dr. Moore, I'm going to start with you and ask you just what this project is, kind of really how it got started and when.
Sure. So this is a research project conducted by both faculty and students. We're trying to assemble a group of videos and interviews and essays about resiliency and people's experience with resiliency to be the subject of further research. So hopefully in the future, some other scholars will be looking at this, looking at the content of them, doing content analysis. What we're doing at the moment is just gathering them together.
Great. And how did it come about? Has it been around a while? Is this new?
This is our second year.
Okay.
And we have, it started as all good projects do when I was walking one of my dogs. And I thought, we should record videos in which the political science department faculty tell about a time that they failed. And I thought, well, but it's going to make us look silly if we're the only department that does it. So we should get all the faculty to do it. And then I thought to myself, boy, that's a lot of work. Mm-hmm. We should make students do it. But if we're going to make students do it, then we should give them credit.
Spoken like a true teacher. Absolutely. Yeah.
And so I thought, well, let's make it a senior project option for students. And that's what we've done. So it's a chance for students to be engaged in doing this research directly. And in fact, they're the ones who find the research subjects. They go out and scour their personal networks, their friendship networks, through Greek organizations or through sports organizations. They find the folks to participate and then bring the information in, and then we aggregate it and do further processing with it.
What was the ultimate goal? What was the purpose of the project? I mean, other than you obviously had a great idea while you were walking two wonderful dogs.
Yeah. So the goal is to create kind of a resource for Cal Poly and the community more broadly to let students know that everyone encounters problems. Everyone encounters obstacles, whether that is from personal weakness to structural oppression, bias or discrimination, or simply to mistakes. And failures of foresight. Whatever the problem is, you had to live through it, and we want to know how you lived through it.
That's great. And I'm curious how you guys got involved in the project and how it's impacting you.
Yeah. So I personally got involved with the project. I heard a little bit about it last year through one of the students who was, one of the first people to start tackling it. Her name was Casey Beckelman. And she kind of talked about the overarching themes and the goals behind it. And that was what really motivated me to look into it. And then specifically, Malena actually reached out and asked kind of what I was thinking for my senior project, and then was also on the same boat of, let's look into this Resiliency Project thing, see what it's all about. And then finally, Dr. Moore has definitely been one of the professors that has had a huge influence in me at Cal Poly. So, following a great leader is definitely something I always try to do. So working on a project with him is definitely very special.
Now, are you a poli sci? Is that your focus?
Yes. So I'm a political science major concentrating in pre-law. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And Melena, how about for you?
So I guess kind of the same as Chase. One of my friends, Cassie Badley, was doing the project with Professor Moore, and I was talking to her because the idea of a senior project sounded kind of scary. And I was like, what have you done? And then she's like, you should just get in touch with Professor Moore. Like, I've really enjoyed it. So then I texted Chase. I was like, let's just do this together. It sounds interesting. And then we met up with Professor Moore, I think last quarter, and we were just kind of talking about it and like kind of like a different approach that we could take with it. So that's kind of how we ended up here now.
So what's your role been with this project? I know Professor Moore's role is to make you guys do the work, right?
I think a major part of it is the soliciting of interviews and finding those student perspectives that are, you know, from unique and diverse backgrounds. So reaching out to our networks, our fellow classmates, members and groups that we're affiliated with, and utilizing those resources we have to have people that we're comfortable with and we know tell their stories. So I guess the solicitation of it all is a big part, but also defining a goal and like a path that we want to take with the project that's a little bit different from a previous standard. So I think that's part of it for sure.
Has it been hard to find those people?
I think at first it was a little difficult, just like texting everyone, like, when are you free? Like, can we come interview you? But then one day we just kind of got the camera and like went to our friends' houses and we're just like, we have to interview you. Like, and it's been really fun, like just hearing everyone's perspective on resiliency.
You know, when I was looking it up on the website and I was looking up some of the stories and I was thinking about my own stories too, mm-hmm. It really kind of flies in the face of how people generally try to present themselves on social media.
Yeah. Mm-hmm,
I mean, it's the total opposite of that, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's a level of vulnerability I don't think people really get down to quite often. And especially, like you said, with social media, you know, you never see someone's struggles on a social media platform. You think, you know, everything's good and dandy. And it was one of the coolest things for me was talking to some of the people I thought I was the closest with and knew the most about. Mm-hmm. And then asking this question and, you know, whether it was something simple like, man, I wish I would have learned how to do my laundry before I came to Cal Poly, because that was something that really put me in the dumps, to, you know, something a little bit deeper in terms of like family connection or something like that. It was a really cool way to kind of break down the constant barriers that we have. And I think modern culture. So it's a really unique perspective to gain from people you think you know very well.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I should explain one thing about the project. Each year, students can set it up and go about it the way they want. Mm-hmm. So last year, mostly students were interviewing family members or friends, and they were working individually. So each student did their own interviews. Mm-hmm. Some are on the website as video, some as audio, some as transcripts. But what happened this year is we got in contact with a Cal Poly alum named Cindy Schmid, who is working with high school students up in Danville. And she said, I have this group of high school students. They're interested in the question of how will I do well in college? How can I get prepared? Yeah. And so Chase and Melena have been interviewing their friends, asking particular questions. And so the questions are, what do you wish you had known before you started at Cal Poly? Mm. What do you wish your parents had known before you started at Cal Poly? And then to professors, what do you wish your incoming students knew? And they're going to put those together into three videos that are focused on those issues. And that way, we're going to have kind of a compilation video that comes out of this that I think is going to be great and a real resource. And then Cindy's going to bring it to her high school students, show it to them, and get their feedback.
Yeah.
And then we're going to bring that back into the loop. So that's been super fun.
That's outstanding. What are you learning from that?
I think kind of that everyone was in the same boat at first coming to Cal Poly.
Are there any themes that you're seeing?
Yeah, time management's a really big one.
For the students?
Yes. Just like
from their perspective or from the perspective of the teachers?
We haven't interviewed any teachers yet. That's next on our list. But a lot of students like did struggle kind of balancing like their social life and academics and kind of like staying in touch with their family, because like freshman year, it's so hard to kind of balance all of that out. Mm-hmm. So kind of like how they learn to do all of that and stay like on track with school as well.
Were there any surprises in what you were hearing from individuals of what they would have liked to have known?
Yeah, I think one of the common things that we've got a few people who've answered the same way, but I think coming into Cal Poly, you're over flooded with like, here are all of your resources here at Cal Poly. Here's what you can do to utilize X, Y, and Z to thrive here. And I was surprised because we got a number of people saying, you know, as fourth years that, you know, looking back, they wish they would have known that those resources are actually there and they're effective. And yeah. I guess it's kind of crazy for me because I've just been, you know, the type of student who always bugs my professors at office hours and kind of utilizes all the resources Cal Poly has to offer. But it was interesting to see that, you know, you come into Cal Poly and all these things are laid out for you. And then seeing that people, you know, wish they would have actually taken that advice and ran with it was
that's a big one.
Can you give some examples of resources that are available that people don't access that would have been helpful for them?
I think a big one's like the advising center and talking to your advisors, because I just don't think a lot of people do that. They kind of try to figure it out by themselves and see like what classes they should take, and then they kind of take a step back and they're like, there's someone like that can help me with this. Mm-hmm. So that's like a pretty big one, I think. Or like even like office hours, like that does help a lot.
With the professors?
Yeah, and I think as like first years, it's intimidating maybe to go in there and ask for help and like admit that you're struggling with a class because you're fresh from high school. Like high school is a lot easier than college was. So it's like a little hard admitting you need help to like a professor. But like they're so effective. I still go to office hours as a senior and they help me a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a transition too, is there not, from high school? I mean, staying after school or going in with a teacher is something that may indicate you're not learning or you're stupid or it's an after school it's a punishment.
Yeah.
Right? But in college, it's a resource.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very different perspective.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, for me especially, there was a strong stigma against like, you know, visiting professors after classes or going into any sort of study sessions they would hold. And, you know, because of competitive GPAs or anything like that, you don't want to be seen as the one falling behind. And that was a sign of it. But then you come to Cal Poly and it's the way to get ahead. So it's like it's a whole new kind of flip that I don't think a lot of people understand right away.
What about from the perspective of what they wish their parents knew? Were there any themes or surprises there?
Yes, we haven't dove too deep into that yet, but we have talked to a couple of our, you know, roommates and close friends, and one of those things is just the communication aspect of it. You know, personally for me, I came to college and I was like, all right, I'm gonna call my mom and dad every week. I'm gonna check in. Yeah, I'm gonna check in on my grandma. I'm gonna do all that. I'm gonna be the perfect college son. But one thing that people would mention is they wish their family would know that, you know, that when you come to college, you're in a whole new phase of life.
Yeah.
You're busier than you probably have ever been. You're getting involved with clubs, sports teams, groups, projects, etc. So you don't have that time that you thought you would have. And I think that's a one of the themes that I can already see formulating and then more becoming more developed later on. Because it is a little bit of an interesting dynamic between like, man, I want to do this, but I don't really have time. But you always should have time for your parents, so you feel bad. So it's a funny little dynamic, I guess.
Yeah. How are you seeing, Professor Moore, from your perspective, the students change or some of their learning and some of the broadening of their points of views as they're involved in this project? Have you noticed shifts?
Yeah, it's been pretty interesting. So I've seen most of the students who are doing it are students who I've known from classes previously, like Melinda and Chase. And I've seen the students, I think Chase said, you know, to be the willingness to be vulnerable and to sort of have this piece of their academic life also be about their emotional life. That's relatively unusual, at least in political science classes. And to watch the students read some of their own stories about their struggles or the stories of their families, it's been really interesting. It's given me a lot more depth of perspective on the students. And I think they're surprised at how interesting and kind of liberating it is to be able to talk about that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Do the students seem to find areas of commonality in areas of struggle that they don't know exist with other students? They kind of go into it thinking that they're the only one or that's something that's unique to them that they're not going to share.
I think that's true. And I think we'll see that with these videos that you guys are putting together this year, because I think we'll have a bunch of different students who offer essentially the same answers, you know, and maybe we'll cut that in such a way as to be able to see that in the video. That, you know, the time management's a theme that emerges a lot. I was also surprised in some of the work that people did last year to see how important family is you know, family is just central to students' ability to succeed and their ability to bounce back. And it's the people who have strong family relationships, not necessarily their parents, sometimes an uncle or an aunt or a grandparent, or even if just a family friend, but who's there for them when they need it. That's really what helps them take that step back towards being okay.
In terms of resiliency.
Exactly.
That's kind of a key to a person's resiliency.
Exactly.
I'm Chris Kington Barker, and you're listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX HD1 San Luis Obispo, KNBX HD1 San Otto, and KSBX Santa Barbara. Today's topic of discussion is Resiliency Project at Cal Poly, an important community resource to gaining better understanding about the concept of resilience through a collection of individual experiences. My guests for today's show are Dr. Matthew J. Moore, Professor of Political Science at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, and students Chase A. Maurer and Milena Traiana. And we invite you to bring any situation that maybe you have that you're willing to share about your resilience, or if you have a question or a comment about what we're talking today about, we'd love to hear from you also. It's 805-781-3875. Again, you can call us at 805-781-3875. Let's talk a little bit about what, if you're finding anything with what you've delved into with resilience for the last couple of years. People who are resilient, I mean, everybody needs to have some form of resilience. I can't imagine there's anyone's life that doesn't have some kind of stressors, but there, you know, there are some suppositions about who is able to be more resilient than others, right?
That kind of operate on. Yeah, and I think for a lot of people, an unconscious supposition is people who have more resources are going to be able to be more resilient, right? So someone who has maybe more financial resources or a bigger family and closer connections. And I think to some extent, the research is bearing that out. But I think it's also true that a number of the contributions that we've gotten are from students who are either socioeconomically disadvantaged or have experienced some kind of discrimination or oppression in their lives and who have overcome that. And that's, I think, a real source of pride for them, you know, that I sort of encountered this obstacle and I didn't see how to get past it. And I did get past it. And I'm okay today. And so I think that that's also a very important thing that I've been seeing emerge out of the interviews that we've done so far.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's, you know, there really isn't there's not a clear attachment to a type of personality that is more resilient than another, right?
I think that's right.
Yeah. I mean, I think the idea, the concept that somebody has to be cold-hearted and tough is going to be more resilient to something difficult is not necessarily true. People can be gentle and open-hearted.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. We really haven't seen any kind of personality connection. And it's been fun for me. At this point, I think we've had, not counting Chase and Milena, who are still in the process, I think we've had 5 true seniors finish through this project, and then 3 students who left Cal Poly without finishing the senior project. Those I call them the gone but not forgotten. and of course, they don't get their degree until they finish the project.
Ah.
And so I've been reaching out to all the students I know like that, or the former students, and any that I learn about, and inviting them to participate. And we've had 3 of them finish the project in the last year too, which has been very satisfying. And seeing, it's so interesting to me, seeing all the different kind of focuses that they have. So some students have focused on resiliency as it relates to women's body image.
Yeah.
Some students on resiliency in sports. You know, others did an interview with someone who had been a martial artist and talking about sort of resiliency in martial arts. I mean, it's just fascinating to me. And in I just learned this the other day that in engineering, resiliency refers to the ability of a system to bounce back from a challenge, right? So that, for example, a resilient electrical system is one that can be interrupted and then relatively quickly come back. So resiliency crops up everywhere.
Everywhere.
The more you look at it, the more you find it.
Yeah, Yeah. What, you know, you talked about going into law, right, mm-hmm. Chase? Mm-hmm. So how do you envision that what you're going to be learning here is going to be applicable to what you're going to need going forward in your career?
Of course. Yeah. I think, law school itself is one of those, you know, I guess, trigger words for people who are either heading into it or have done it in the past.
All the lawyer jokes.
All the lawyer, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. You name it, I've heard them. But
you're gonna need resilience,
right? Yeah. You're gonna have to live up to the bad jokes. But I think, you know, going through such a challenging and rigorous course load, and you know, meeting a ton of expectations, even in the you know, grad school area of law school, you're gonna need to have that resilience to say, man, I got, you know, another, you know, 300 page reading and a paper to write, and it's like, okay, that last one I didn't do so well on, but having the ability to bounce back, which I think is, you know, applicable to undergrad as well, but specifically with law school and, you know, all the requirements that are going to be coming, it's definitely something that I have tried to explore in myself since I've been in the project, mm-hmm. is saying, okay, where have I been resilient, and kind of building up that resume of like, here's what you've gone through, here's how you came back, and then moving forward, taking that and saying, you know, you've done these things, you can easily tackle this. So whatever that be, whether that be in just law school or going into the legal field as a whole, there's going to be constant setbacks and times where you have to show that elasticity, that is resilience, so that you're able to keep moving forward in a, you know, happy and healthy way, and not just kind of putting your nose on the grindstone and not thinking about anything other than, you know, what you're working on. But yeah.
Okay. And Milena, how about you? Is political science an area of focus for you?
Yeah. So I'm also political science with a pre-law concentration.
Same thing. So, and how do you see that it's going to have some value for you going forward? What are you kind of gleaning from it so far that you think is applicable?
I mean, I love my major. I have a marketing minor. So next year I'm going to go into like a marketing program. Down in Irvine, mm-hmm. so I'm going to be working there. But I think it's, or like this project, like throughout the whole project, I think I've become more like empathetic to like my peers and people that I go to school with, just seeing like, I guess, the commonalities that we all have and have gone through. But yeah, I definitely did want to do the whole pre-law thing, but I think after 4 years, it's just not like what I'm cut out for. I think I'm going to go a different direction.
It may not be about being cut out for it. It may just not be an area of passion.
Yeah, it doesn't really spark that.
Doesn't spark it. Yeah.
It used to, but I don't know anymore.
I get that, yeah.
And Milena has, I think, a particular insight. She has a sibling who she prepared an advice book for. Maybe you could explain that. That was so cool.
What's that about?
So my sister graduated high school last year, and she's a freshman at Cal Poly. She's mechanical engineering, so her course load's I see it, and it's a lot heavier than mine is. So I didn't know what to get her for her graduation present. So I made like a little advice book, and I asked all of my friends kind of to give her some advice before coming to Cal Poly. And I think it's like 30 pages, and it's just like all sorts of advice. It's either there's a lot of like social life, but there's also academic, and like she like loved it, and I've shared it with Professor Moore.
It's wonderful.
What can you tell me some bits from it?
I mean, one of my favorites is definitely like, if you're studying a lot, it's not really worth it to like stay in the library all night. It's better to get a good night's rest before the big midterm, or kind of like there's always going to be a party. It's better to kind of focus on like your schoolwork and then like work hard and then play later.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And so those are great tips for freshmen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She loved it. Yeah.
What with this project, each year do you kind of change the focus with the students?
Yeah. And I'm trying to let the students sort of choose their own focus to the extent that I can. This year we had this sort of lucky connection with Cindy up in Danville. I have another student who's starting in the spring who wanted to do something slightly different, and I'm going to encourage him to focus on the idea of the failure resume, which is, it's a negative resume. It's a resume of all the schools you applied to and didn't get in, and all the jobs you applied for but didn't get, and all the journals that you sent articles to and got rejected. It's intended to show that even the most successful person has failed much more often than they've succeeded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so we're hoping to get some examples of that from both students and hopefully from faculty to put up on the webpage in a new section. And so I'm hoping to encourage this new student to focus on that.
I think that's a great idea. That would be really interesting, in fact. That would be fascinating.
I can tell you, for me, my failure resume is much longer than my success resume.
Oh, yep. Hallelujah to that. Well, the thing that I was thinking about when I was looking again at your website is that the books that people put out about their successes and their leadership often focus on their successes, you know, and what they do extremely well. What I see when I see speakers who are doing motivational speaking is the ones that are most compelling, that really capture their audience, are the ones that are humbled by what they've had to go through and are willing to share that either in a funny way or in a self-reflective way. To say, you know, that you don't always win.
Yeah.
And it brings the audience along with them of, if they could overcome that, I can fail. So that means I can succeed, right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree 100%. The people whose work I really like in that area are the people who are willing to talk candidly about their own failures and weaknesses and shortcomings. And then demonstrate through their reflection that they're working on it.
Yeah. Again, I get back to social media, which I think is really it's almost the bane of that, of people who choose the best photos of themselves, the best times and activities that they're doing. You know, they don't show themselves sitting in sloppy clothes with food dripping on themselves because they've had a horrible day and
like
there's
the
no one around. And
I'm just suddenly imagining having a new section of our website that is all unflattering photos.
I think an anti-social media, that'd be a good take on it. Would be
next year.
Wonderful. Yeah. Are you really when you don't want people to see you? Mm-hmm. I think that would be a hoot.
Yeah.
First, it would be great. I think it would be just absolutely fascinating to do.
Mm-hmm. Like, who are you when you're down, kind of?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like a resiliency Instagram.
Yeah.
Where you get to interview people at their worst.
Uh-huh. Who are you when you don't want people to see you? We're going to take a quick call here from Tucker. Hi, Tucker.
Hey.
Hey. You have a question or a comment?
I do. So I'm a student as well at Cal Poly, and so I just had a question for Chase and Milena.
All right.
I'm assuming you guys both have commitments outside of academics. I was wondering how you prioritize and stay resilient when scheduling conflicts occur.
Yeah, that's a great question, Tucker. Thank you for asking. One of the things that has worked for me is not trying to spread myself too thin. I think we're in a culture where you're constantly expected to say yes to everything. And I personally myself am in that boat, but I have been a little bit more conscientious of valuing people's time as much as my own and not promising things I can't follow through on. So I think that's a really important thing. And when you can't and you have to say no, understanding that's a part of life and not feeling bad for that.
Yeah, for me, I try to put school first always. I have a planner that has kept me sane all 4 years. So kind of just planning, I guess, prioritizing what's more important to me, and then also making time for like some more like low-key time aside from school and social life, kind of for like my mental health, definitely helps.
Well, that totally makes sense. Do you guys have any like personal anecdotes that where you guys could like share, like just like a time where you were both were super busy with school and you felt like you needed to like manage your time in a different way in which you could both stay mentally healthy and do well in school?
For me, it was my junior fall quarter here. I'm in Greek life, so I was on the exec board. I had a job and I was in 20 units. That was definitely like the hardest quarter of my life. So it was an on-campus job, so it was like kind of easier than being off campus, but I ended up having to quit it because I just could not handle all of it. And my parents didn't really want me to be working anyways, but I thought I could do it all, but I kind of had to admit to myself that I needed a little bit more time for myself.
Yeah, similar. I think this last quarter for me was that quarter where I just absolutely spread myself too thin and wasn't doing the best job on any of my in any of the areas I was working. So whether that be in my leadership position on one club or another club, and then my job, I wasn't putting my full effort into it because I was to any of them because I was trying to spread myself evenly throughout all of them. So recognizing that in order to do the best for one thing, you kind of have to have enough focus and time to do so.
Yeah.
That's something I definitely learned.
Gotcha. Well, I appreciate your guys' responses. It helped me get a lot on my chest. So it's really helpful.
Thank you for calling us, Tucker.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Bye.
Okay, we're going to take a few minutes for a break, and then we'll return. If you want to join our discussion, you can call us at 805-781-3875. Okay, welcome back to Central Coast Voices and our discussion about resiliency today. My guests for today's show are Dr. Matthew J. Moore, Professor of Political Science at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, and students Chase A. Maurer and Milena Triana. If you have questions about today's topic or you have comments, we'd love to also hear a story maybe about your resilience or if this resonates with you. You can reach us at 805-781-3875. And once again, that's 805-781-3875. You know, one of the things, we had a call from Tucker and he was asking about how Milena and Chase kind of have had a situation where they've had to pull on their own resilience and what they've needed to do. And resilience isn't just someone being strong enough to handle the situation and bounce back. There really are some skills to it that we learn, right?
Yeah.
That we have to bring to play. Can we talk a little bit about that? Can
Sure.
you share that?
Yeah, well, I can tell you a little bit about my own experience, and I bet Chase and Milena have something to add to there, too. So my, I guess, spiritual tradition is Buddhist.
Mm-hmm.
And I came to Buddhism back in 2006 when I had just accepted the job at Cal Poly, was just about to get married and move to the West Coast from the East Coast, and was just having so much kind of life-related stress in my life. And I thought, boy, I'm just going to drive myself nuts if I don't figure out some way to deal with this in a more systematic way. You know, I can't just be hoping for strength and
right.
hoping that it'll all work out. So I began to meditate and then sort of came to Buddhism through meditation. I think it's supposed to be the other way, but that was that was what happened for me. And I ended up learning this lesson that I tell my kids and my own children, and then I tell my students this all the time, that in the Buddhist tradition, the idea is that life has lots of conflict in it. It's always some sort of source of unhappiness. And there's really no way to avoid that.
Mm-hmm.
And then happiness all comes from conflict between what life gives you and what your mind wants.
Right.
And when that happens, you have three choices. You can keep suffering, you can change the world, or you can change your mind. Sometimes changing the world is the right thing to do and maybe the only thing to do. But most of the time, changing your mind is the best first step. Mm-hmm. And maybe the step that will allow you to live again till tomorrow so that you can then change the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so meditation for me has been how I do that. And I have young children. Unfortunately, I can't meditate as much as I wish I could. But I'm able to do some. And I host a meditation group on campus to give people sort of a resource for learning some of that resilience. But a lot of meditation isn't really about the breathing and the counting and all that kind of stuff. It's really about learning to like yourself mm-hmm. and the parts of you that you don't like and that you pretend you'd like to pretend aren't there. Mm-hmm. And I think that's been that's been central for me for learning how to be resilient in my own life.
Yeah. When we're in a situation where we don't like ourselves, we also try to hide ourselves.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think that's a lot of what you're finding is that people end up having or either feeling they have to hide themselves or expect that they need to hide themselves because of they won't be accepted. Mm-hmm. And you're talking about mindfulness. Can Right. you talk a little bit about how mindfulness plays into all of this, not only in terms of letting go, but it's really to be fully present?
Yeah. I mean, I think of mindfulness as being kind of a non-judgmental acceptance of what's happening right now, whatever that is.
And that's not the way our society here in the United States mm-hmm. is going right now. We're going in a different direction than that. We're getting entrenched in our side, our belief, and kind of pushing away any ideas that may creep in from something that is different, you know, than our way of thinking. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just a couple things that I think were valuable that were discussed is, you know, when we want to hide things from ourselves, we hide, you know, ourselves as a whole.
Yep.
I think there's another side of the coin where we're talking about kind of the social media trends and instead of hiding the things you don't like, you overemphasize the mm-hmm. things you do like about yourself and you, you know, broadcast that to the public and try and like pretend like that's all you are. And I think that's another side of the coin that's very, you know, toxic in the sense that you're highlighting things that you love about yourself and then pretending like the things that you need
don't
to work
exist.
On don't exist. So mm-hmm. they're just getting worse and worse and worse and kind of accumulating over time. But
One of the concerns that we've talked about on this show in the past has been the concerns with students who feel isolated and to the point of feeling suicidal, mm-hmm. you know, that pressure builds and builds and builds, and they see all these other people that they expect are able to cope and able to deal with it, and they cannot. And, you know, so they feel there's something desperately wrong with them, and they should just give it up.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it's the issue with comparison, I think, and you know, going to a you know such a strong university like Cal Poly, there's people constantly doing things that you know mesmerize you. I'm a part of a group called Poly Reps, and that's one of those groups where it's like, I feel like every other week there's someone doing something that just blows my mind.
Yeah,
and it's like, man, what am I doing?
Right.
And I got into that trap of, you know, instead of you know focusing on the great things that I've done, I'm like, oh well, that's not as cool as what you know Joey or Max are doing. It's this toxic kind of trap of comparison. And I think it's one thing that, as a society, I think is common. It's a common thing, not even just in college or in your young ages. It's when you get into, you know, your job, it's like, oh, I got this job, and you know, so-and-so got that job.
Right.
So it's a weird little route of self-doubt through comparison.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if people are always comparing themselves to someone else, there's never any celebration about what they're able to do themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you fall into a trap of not, you know, knowing who you are really and what you enjoy and what you actually want to do because it's, you know, oh, they did that. So like, I should probably try and do that too.
So how do we encourage people to avoid those kinds of things? I mean, how can you talked about meditation and mindfulness as being part of resiliency. What else is part of resiliency? What else helps people attain and retain resiliency?
I think you have to remind yourself that what you see on social media is a highlight reel and that it's not people at their worst. It's just people like broadcasting like what they want you to know about them.
Well, it's not even people that they're not people at their worst. It's people maybe at their very best.
Yeah, exactly. So I think just maybe like me and my roommates always talk about like I like know them and then like I see like them on social media and they're very different people. I'm sure as am I. But just kind of having those conversations and like kind of like opening up to people around you and just having those conversations because if not, it all gets trapped in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anything else?
Yeah, one of the things I thought about is just having a self-knowledge of, you know, who you are, what your goals are in life. Mm-hmm. And you don't need to have the big goals, but, you know, the small stuff, like, I don't like doing this, I like doing this. If other people are doing that, and I don't like, I'm not going to do it. So having that self-knowledge of, you know, what you like, what you don't, but then also, you know, going back to mindfulness and being resilient and tips for, you know, kind of how to be resilient, you have to know what you need personally. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing that goes back to comparison. Like, just because someone, you know, when they feel down, they'll go out and, you know, take an hour and a half of alone time and journal. Like, that doesn't mean that's how you have to practice mindfulness. You know, Dr. Moore loves meditating. I love meditating. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean you have to do it.
Right.
That's not the only way.
Right.
So kind of having that knowledge of understanding what you need and when you need it is important too.
What about finding a purpose?
Yeah.
You know, people having a purpose and feeling a purpose. And
yeah, I mean, certainly that's been central in my life. I think had the feeling, I love teaching. And,
yeah.
You know, it's been my profession for the last 17 years, and it's just been so fulfilling that, you know, I wake up in the morning some days and I'm tired or my kids are being grumpy or whatever, and I think, I get to go teach, you know, I get to go do this fun thing. Like, that's so great.
Yeah.
And I think that's, having some purpose and goal has been huge.
And if you don't have it through what you're doing, through your work, it may be that it's something that you do outside of that. It
sure.
may be through volunteerism. Mm-hmm. It may be through something that you do for your family.
It you may just need to find what you love.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, something that really moves you, mm-hmm. that grabs
that
you.
That spark, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And not waiting until you have the time to do it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of it, is to understand that creating the time for that in the midst of everything else that you're doing is part of being able to be resilient.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's take a call here from Tom. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi. Did you have a comment or question?
I had a question. Yeah, so I'm a father. My son goes to SLO High, and he's going to be going off to college here in a few years. And my question, I'm assuming you guys were both in the dorms.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, how do you stay resilient in terms of health in the dorms? Because I know with all, like, the viruses and epidemics going around right now, how do you keep your body healthy?
Yeah, I think...
Good question.
Yeah, I mean... The classic thing that you hear on most college campuses, you get the dorm plague. Seems like everyone gets sick at the same time. I think it's just shock. Your body doesn't know how to live with that many people around you from different areas. But hydrating is very important for combating sickness. I have a hydration app that I've had.
And not with beer.
Not with beer, yeah. That does not count, Tom. I think doing that, living a healthy lifestyle in terms of, you know, exactly, kind of going back to what I said, whatever you need, whether that's going to the gym, whether that's, you know, getting out into nature, hiking, surfing, whatever, doing those things as much as you want and as frequently as you can to make sure that you're going to be not only mentally healthy, but, you know, physically healthy as well.
And keeping your dorm room clean helps a lot,
yeah.
Because I feel like that's how a lot of people get sick. So just kind of staying on top of that.
Well, thank you, guys. I'll have to relay that information to my son.
Yeah, do. And, you know, I will tell you that both of these guys came in here and used the
hand sanitizer
when they came in. So that could be part of it, too.
Mm-hmm.
They're listening to the health messages.
Yeah.
The CDC.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The CDC.
That's right.
Yeah, right. She's got it on her cell phone, pulling it up daily now. Thanks
well, thank
for calling in, Tom.
Appreciate it.
Okay. Bye. How about, you know, when we talk about resilience in people, are people just naturally resilient alone, or do they need to reach out?
I think it depends on the person.
Talk a little bit more about that.
I think I'm a resilient person.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty independent, but compared to my sister, she definitely needs more support from, like, her support system,
mm-hmm.
which I think is really important to have, because even though I think I'm independent, like, sometimes you need those people to kind of, like, lean on and ask for advice or just kind of just be around them sometimes.
Right. But does that make her a weaker person?
No, not at all. I just
think
people are different in themselves.
Right.
Yeah.
So resilience isn't about going it alone.
No. It's just kind of how you deal with your situation, I think. that's yeah. like the best way for you to deal in a certain situation. I think that's what resiliency is.
Yeah. And does everybody have some limit to their resilience?
I'm sure.
Yes.
Yeah. Chase yeah. is sure of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just it kind of goes back to the point you're talking about earlier. Is, you know, just because do you have to be individually resilient, or can you have people come alongside you? I think I learned how to have people help me out, and how to help me practice resilience through knowledge. I kind of hit my boiling point, so to speak, with resilience. I was doing as much as I could for myself, and I was still feeling mentally distressed or something like that. And then I was finally like, okay, it's time to really think about like bringing people in and talking to them and mm-hmm. kind of working through that. So when you hit that limit, there's always more help you can get, I would say. And it doesn't mean you're less resilient. It just means you're hitting different marks that you didn't see coming. And then the proper response to that would be to get whatever help you need to push you past that next plethora or peak of resilience, I guess. So
on the website, one of the things that it related was the importance of leaders sharing information with the people that they're leading about the pitfalls that they've fallen into or the difficulties that they've had. Can you talk a little bit more about that, Professor Moore, and why that is important and how that impacts people that are hearing it?
Sure. Well, I think Chase and Melinda mentioned earlier that it can be intimidating as a first-year student to, go to a professor's office hours or to admit that you're not fully understanding something and you need help. And I think that the more that professors or other people in positions of authority can help to dispel that kind of anxiety, the better. That should be no shame in asking for help when you need it and where you need it. And so to the extent that professors can humanize themselves, talk about their mm-hmm. failures, talk about the things that they've tried and failed at or things that haven't worked out and the ways that they bounced back, I think all to the better. Along those lines, for example, at numerous times in my life, there have been struggles that I haven't known how to deal with myself, and I've gone and sought professional help, and therapists have been enormously helpful to me. Mm-hmm. And I think there's no shame in admitting that. Yeah. And in fact, I think it's true of probably all of my colleagues, that I imagine somewhere. And the more the students know that, I think the more it makes them think, okay.
It's normal.
That's normal.
There's like a stigma around
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I co-instruct with someone, and he frequently takes the role of giving information and talking about what the very positive things are and talking about things that we're teaching about from a standpoint of how to do it to a goal of perfection. And my role in it is to talk about my failures in it mm-hmm. and to normalize it yeah. in terms of, don't quit your day job. It's going to be hard. Mm-hmm. And I've never failed to have individuals who've been in attendance come up afterwards and say, I've needed to hear that mm-hmm. because it is intimidating to always feel as though someone has learned how to do everything and it's all gone okay. And I'm afraid I don't know how to get going, that I'm going to stumble and fall. I won't know how to recover from that. I think that's really important for people to get, that even people who do something very professionally and are extremely good at it and wow us, mm-hmm. and I get wowed by people every day, mm-hmm. still can mess it up.
Totally.
Yeah.
And do something just really mind-boggling stupid. Mm-hmm. And so what? You have to come back from that.
It's a process of learning.
Yeah. Yeah. What other kinds of things did you find in the last 2 years that are important things for going forward for students and maybe for the parents that are important to share?
Mm. I mean, a lot, a lot of the things that are on the website. I was thinking a little bit about the answer to the question that Chase and Melinda have been posing to their friends and to some of my colleagues. And thinking, what do I wish my students knew and their parents knew? And I think for the students, I would say the thing I wish they knew was not only that it's okay to come to office hours, but that it's okay to ask anything. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a student today say, how do I find out about whether faculty need help doing research this summer? And the answer is you go and ask every single faculty member in the department individually. And that's hard, but no one's going to come to you, you know, and please come ask us. And that's why we're here.
Yeah.
And similarly, you know, I wish that the parents knew that the kids need the support of their families still. They've gone off to college, but they're not on the moon. And they need you, you know, they don't need you to be fighting their battles for them, but they need your support. They need you there saying, I understand why that really sounds hard. Mm-hmm. You know, what have you tried so far? And mm-hmm. to really be there to help them out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That resonates for sure.
Yeah.
My parents always give me flack, like, man, I thought you lost my number. You never call me. And I go, I thought you lost mine. You haven't called me either.
Yeah.
Two-way street, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great point. Mm-hmm. I think I know my daughter and I go through that too. That's great. Mm-hmm. I'm Chris Kingdom-Barker with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, your listener-supported radio station. If you just joined us and you want to hear the show in its entirety, KCBX makes our locally produced programs available on demand after each show airs. Just wait a few hours and then go to www.kcbx.org, click the programs drop-down, and then click News Talks. You can select Central Coast Voices and receive any number of our archived shows. Today's topic is resiliency and the Resiliency Project at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. My guests for the show are Dr. Matthew J. Moore, Professor of Political Science, Cal Poly SLO, and students Chase A. Maurer and Milena Triana. We have time for maybe one more call. And you're welcome to ask question or bring your comment or join our discussion at 805-781-3875. Again, that's 805-781-3875. So let's kind of talk about the things that you want to make sure that we get out. Mm-hmm. What are you still looking for people, Chase and Are you?
Yeah.
Do they need to contact you? Are you looking for other students? Are you looking outside the students?
Yeah, I think we're always looking for great stories and people who want to tell them. Obviously, we don't have. Do we have an email for?
Okay, it's on the website.
Yes. So on our website, we do have an email where you can send, information in terms of if you want to tell a story or something like that. So.
And Melina, I saw on the website that people can submit, mm-hmm. right? They can.
That's right.
They
so the project is open.
Videos.
That's right. The project is open to the public.
Oh, it
so
is. Okay. Great.
Anyone and everyone is welcome to submit their story. You can submit anonymously or in your own name if you want. The website address is politicalscience.calpoly.edu/resiliency. Again, that's politicalscience.calpoly.edu/resiliency.
And actually, I found it by Googling Resiliency Project at Cal Poly, and boom, I just went right to it because I'm not that good at remembering.
But we welcome submissions from anyone and everyone.
Mm-hmm. I think it would be great to have submissions from people in the working community.
Yeah, right. That'd be
professors,
awesome.
Professors, from
anyone,
individuals that have been, have really done some great things, from those people that have wowed us, mm-hmm. and from people that are still struggling, mm-hmm. and it would be great. It'd be great.
And I think the other thing is the one encouragement I would have is it doesn't have to be some resounding story of a huge life setback that you utilize all these resources to eventually express resilience. It's just your story and how you feel it showed resiliency. There's no boundaries or borders that you need to hit. There's no, mandatory statements. It's your story, raw and uncut, and whatever you think you learned from it.
Yeah, we're not talking about climbing a mountain, falling in a crevice, and having to cut your
exactly.
leg off.
We're
talking about how people are dealing with their everyday life and how we need to bounce back from
that. And it's encouraging to hear the stories, or at least for me it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I agree completely. Yeah.
Yeah. Is there something that was particularly moving for you? Hmm. Or something that really resonated for you?
I think for me, it's just interesting seeing people that I see every day kind of like get real and like kind of like tell us like like who they are more when we were interviewing them, because I kind of just like see people in passing and I recognize them, but actually interviewing them was like pretty cool. Like, I don't know. Did you feel the same way?
Totally. Yeah. I think it's a whole new side of people. We don't see, no matter how close you are. I interviewed all my roommates and got five answers that I would never have expected. And it's also nice to hear people talk about these things that they struggled with freshman year and sophomore year and junior and senior year, and recognize that, I did that too. Thank goodness I'm not the only one. So whether that's office hours or the classic mistake of just not listening to all the people telling you to use your resources or anything like that, I think it's all very valuable.
How about for you, Professor Moore? Anything that you want to make sure that we get across today? We've just got a couple of minutes.
I think in terms of the stories that I found the most moving are the ones that are the most personal, you know, where participants have shared stories about illness or in some cases stories about assault, things that have, you know, been really profoundly, profoundly impactful for them. And yeah, I really appreciate their willingness to share that, to be open. And some have done it in their own name and some have done it anonymously. Either is fine.
That's a good point, because people can submit stories anonymously.
Yes, absolutely.
And, I think
and many
that,
have.
Yeah, that's excellent too.
Yeah, it's interesting to see, you know, to meet people you've never talked to, and then all of a sudden you're hearing about something that, you know, I wouldn't personally share with my closest friend. So it's a weird, and not a weird, it's a very valuable platform to kind of, for people to
it's
get
empowering.
Stuff off their chest. It's cool.
Well, I love the project. I want to see what you're going to do with it next year. Kudos to you and walking the dogs.
Oh, thank you so much.
Coming up with this. I'm Chris Kington Barker, and you have been listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX. Join me next week when we'll have I'll have another guest. I'll be here again next week. My special thanks to the sharing of the information about the Cal Poly San Luis Obispo Resiliency Project, and my guest, Dr. Matthew J. Moore, Professor of Political Science, Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, and students Chase Maurer and Milena Triana. This show was made possible through underwriting by Joan Geller Sargent, and you've been listening to Central Coast Voices.